This is Public Radio for Santa Fe and Northern New Mexico, KSFR White Rock. Also streaming on the web at KSFR.org.
Gotta dance.
This is Gotta Dance, and I'm your host, Donna Howell. My guest in the second half of tonight's program is New Mexico icon Jim Turr, videographer and writer of parody and country songs. Jim Turr will be performing at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe this Thursday, June 13th at 6 p.m., and he'll be giving a free songwriter's workshop at 4 p.m. Well, let's see. Stay tuned for conversation and music with Jim Turr right after this announcement.
Please cut my song, Mr. Travis. Won't you hear my tune, Mrs. Twain? Mama sent me out today to pitch 'em. To go home empty-handed would be a shame. It don't need to be your next hit single. It don't need to be on the TV. Even if it's just there on your album, that'd be fine with Mama and me.
That song with the intentional crackle is from my guest tonight, satirist and songwriter Jim Turr, a fixture on the Northern New Mexico scene for about 40 years, known for his novelty songs taking on corporate greed, the NRA, menopause, Walmart, health care, and many more pointed topics. Many of Jim's satires were featured on the Dr. Demento national radio program and also on major networks. Jim also produces videos, both funny and educational, and serious documentaries, and does freelance creative advertising using videos and writing jingles. The Toss No Mas, New Mexico anti-litter song that Mike Hearn sang is Jim's creation, as is the Snapple song. Jim's originally from near Long Island, New York, and has been kicking around the music and film business ever since he graduated from Northwestern University. He has a number of songwriting CDs to his credit that include both parody songs and many mainstream country songs. And it's my pleasure to have Jim Turr, my neighbor from Las Vegas, New Mexico, on Gotta Dance tonight. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you. That's quite a summary.
Well, Jim, I was kind of overwhelmed when I started cyber-spying on your endeavors. Besides being a presidential candidate in the Arizona primary and an author, you do and have done so many things relevant to music and performing arts. You've acted in some movies, you've produced other people's records, you've created hundreds of videos and some documentaries. So when I emailed you about what aspect you wanted to concentrate on for this short 30 minutes, you said your push now is to become a commercially successful songwriter in the country genre. Why did you settle on that?
Well, I would never say I'm settled on anything, but I have come to realize that so much of my effort and self-training has been in songwriting and in specifically targeting, when we say commercial songwriting, I don't know if everybody knows what I mean. I don't mean necessarily becoming a star performer myself, but writing songs that other people can cut. It's a very specific craft, and I've always loved it. And, you know, somebody writes those songs, and I like to write them, and I think you get quite a story and quite a lot of juice into a good country song.
Well, you've got some ancestors with similar talents, including a Yiddish playwright and three great uncles. Max Turr, who is a Russian immigrant who became an Oscar-nominated movie soundtrack composer. Michael Turr, another Hollywood soundtrack composer. And Al Turr, a film and television actor. Was there any help, inspiration, or genetic legacy from this folk?
Did I mention this to you, or did you dig this up yourself?
Honest, I'm a good spy.
Oh, my God. I only found this out a couple of years ago myself. I mean, I remember my father saying that I had a couple great uncles in Hollywood, but I never looked into it. But, you know, when I put together the video of my Jitterbug song, I looked up Jitterbug videos on YouTube, and I saw a Jitterbug novelty tune, and I watched it, and then it said, musical supervisor Turr, which one of the Turr guys, And then I found out there were three brothers who were all active in Hollywood and in music. And I started realizing I have some heritage or some genetics in this business.
Well, you were living in California in the early 70s when you met Americana and outlaw country pioneer Steve Young and ended up buying the rights to and reissuing his famous Seven Bridges Road. And I lost a big chunk of continuity in trying to spy on your life here. Can you straighten me out on the chronology of
yes.
those early days?
Yes. Well, between college and moving back to Las Vegas, I think I was in Las Vegas when my dear friend Sid Houseman, who went to college in Las Vegas at Highlands, whom you know, asked me to go out with them to California to be in a bluegrass band called Sweetgrass. So I was in the band, I played electric bass, and we recorded an album. And that was the first recording endeavor I was involved in, and I was hooked. Then, over the years, I continued with songwriting, a little record production, and I did get to know Steve Young. I heard his album, Seven Bridges Road, and it was just one of those things like people talk about where you just connect with something and almost wore the record out. I got to know Steve, who was in the Bay Area at that time, and had done this album that I thought was fabulous and didn't get much recognition. And I arranged to buy it from Warner Brothers Reprise Record for almost nothing. And I reissued it on my label, which I was calling Blue Canyon Records, and got some notoriety. It was even reviewed in Rolling Stone. But right around that time, so I'm back in New Mexico, and I did get to know the Last Mile Ramblers, George Bullfrog and Junior Brown. He played steel and guitar great, and years later he got a little famous. And we did an album, and Slim Pickens was... Oh, I produced an album by Slim Pickens. Did you come across that?
I did, and I'm going to ask you some questions about that soon.
But anyway, in Slim, I met Slim on a plane. We went into the restroom, and he recorded a little line that was on the Last Mile Ramblers album. Then we did an album together. But all those albums were, you know, bought by other record companies and for a little and distributed a little around later. But I can tell you about any of those that you want to know more about.
Oh, all right. But before we get to that, I'd like to play one of my favorites from an early CD you did called Demos and Diamonds. And as I said, we're going to dwell on some country stuff soon. But I know I said to you, I think swing is in your blood. So I'd like to play Do You Like to Jitterbug?
Mm.
Well, the world goes round and so do we. Been doing this dance since 43. Now I've been told when you hear that beat, you're hearing millions and millions of happy feet. The world wouldn't be in such a big bad fight if everybody was up and jitterbugging all night. Say, do you like a jitterbug? Do you like a jitterbug? Well, the beat was born just sweeping that high. A DJ's born to talk that jive. Wind ain't nothing if it don't blow. Cadillac's junk if it won't go. Froggy lives just to catch that fly. And people got a jitterbug to stay alive. I mean, do you like a jitterbug? Downtown club, give me a squeeze and I'll give you a hug. As soon as we hear that 4-4 sound, the first starts flying and we go to town. I never seen such a beautiful sight. It's all our friends jitterbugging all night. I'm saying,
do you like jitterbug?
Of course I do. Certainly, round and round. A mug or glass. Do you like to cut a rug? Do you like to kiss a hug? Do you like to jitterbug? What I mean is. Do you like to cuddle up? Do you like to kiss my? Do you like to chill up? I mean it.
How'd you come to write that song?
Well, it was one of those lyrics that came to me kind of very fast and out of the blue. And I will say that I feel like some of the lines were inspired by one of my favorite songwriters and inspirations, Chuck Berry. Oh, and I'll tell you why Jitterbug may have come to mind is because when I was in junior high in Las Vegas, during the noon hour, they had sock hops in the gym. Remember sock hops? What I learned to dance at that time, when I was still young enough to learn anything, was Jitterbug. And it just came back to me as a wonderful, wholesome activity and a song to celebrate jitterbugging.
Oh, right. Well, since you're pushing now towards songwriting, what do you think are the key skills that a songwriter needs to become commercially successful?
Well, I think obviously you have to love the genre. And I have to thank my old friend Danny Brumbelow from back in prehistory. I lived with him and his wife in Albuquerque in 68, one summer home from college. And I think I started listening to country music because he was listening to it. And it was the great days of George Jones and Tammy Wynette and just all this stuff. And it just really grew on me. And I got to love country music. And I think I just started thinking in those terms, in terms of writing. And as many people have observed, country music, number one, you can hear the lyrics. Number two, they're often about heartbreak and hard kind of stuff. They're story songs, a lot of them. Tom T. Hall and all that, who's another one of my idols. And it's just a genre that's very rich to me. And I've always played around with it and tried to get good at it and write a good song that somebody else might cut or that people will like. And it's just a tremendous challenge and a fun thing to try to write something that's poetic, that has a lot of meaning and depth and metaphor and reverberation. You know, it's like talking to people. So the challenge in country music is to write something that will reach people, and that's when you have a hit, if the music is good, too.
I'd like to play one of your early songs, and that is the one that Slim Pickens recorded, because it has those elements. I mean, it shows your passion for old country. It's a beautiful song, and it's storytelling, as written by you and as done by Slim Pickens, who did that whole album was storytelling stuff. So let's play A Stranger in Nashville.
Come walking into Nashville one day not too long ago. A tall, skinny fella with a bony face and real sharp eyes that seemed to look right through. He had a guitar with him. He managed to get into the office of one of the big music publishers to sing a couple of his songs. Just a couple now, I don't have too much time, the publisher told me. The stranger sang a real sad song about a man whose woman had left him crying. And a song about a train. The publisher stood up and he said, "Well, Hoss, you've got a lot of writing talent developing there. When you get it slicked up a little bit more, come and see me again. And we're really looking for more upbeat, happy tunes. You know what I mean." The stranger seemed to show a deep sadness in his eyes, but he smiled and he thanked the man for his encouragement. And he slowly walked outside. It was a nice sunny day in Nashville, and the stranger leaned his bony frame up against a shade tree. He began to play again. A couple of fellas who was walking by pretty fast stopped to listen when they heard the strange, sad voice. It seemed to remind them of something from long ago. After listening to the stranger sing for a minute, one of the men said, "You know, son, if you could grow your hair a little longer and give that voice some time to mature, I think my record company might be able to come up with the right song to try and make a star out of you. Here's my card. Give me a call in a year or so. Here's a couple of bucks. Go get yourself a good meal and put some meat on your bones." The stranger smiled his sad smile once again, and he thanked the man for his kindness. Walked downtown and he stopped to stare at some of the older buildings with a faraway look in his eye. Tears started rolling down his cheek as he stood in front of the Grand Ole Opry House, now deserted and quiet. And he sat out on the bench and he started to sing once again. The people who were walking by near enough to hear stopped, and they listened to the sad voice. For a few minutes, they all seemed to forget about their own troubles as the tall stranger sang from his heart, the way they weren't used to hearing so much anymore. The stranger smiled a little brighter this time as he swung his guitar back over his shoulder and he walked away, knowing that people still love to hear a simple, honest song. And then the ghost of Hank Williams took one more long look at the old Opry House and disappeared.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Gotta Dance on KSFR, Santa Fe's only public radio. I'm your host, Donna Howell, talking with New Mexico satirist and songwriter Jim Turr.
I'm loving what you put together here, by the way. You are the researcher from H.E. Double Hockey Sticks. I couldn't have written this narrative as well as you have.
Well, Jim, a heading on one of your websites says, "In this world of computers, Starbucks, and iPhones, I need what I once got from Haggard and Jones." And I think you've told us a little bit about that, but you want to say, what was it that you once got from those artists?
And I'm not saying I don't hear it now, but country music has changed a lot. And as some cynical people have said, the only place you can hear pop music anymore is on country radio. But back a ways, as you know, were a lot of great, still kind of heart-ripping, storytelling country songs that weren't all about the same thing, about my girlfriend and about how hot she is and about isn't it great that we live in America and we drink beer in our little town. And so it's gotten a little bit less interesting, although there are still some good country songs. But I'll tell you, I moved back to Las Vegas a couple years ago after being in Santa Fe for 23 years. And, you know, one of the blessings was that there's a radio station in Las Vegas, a country oldies station. They still have a way of picking out some of the songs that are just got so much substance and great Randy Travis stuff and Gene Watson and some Tom T. Hall and some Merle Haggard. And it's just got that more hard-hitting, what I consider substantial, good old country storytelling, raw meat type of feel. And listening to that just got me very inspired. And somehow between that radio station I was listening to in Vegas and having the time, I started on this huge songwriting streak. And that's what resulted in some of these recent songs and recent albums. And now I'm starting to get some recognition that makes me feel I've really have gotten somewhere with, you know, some kind of big-time recognition. And makes me feel I have gotten better. And some of the old songs are pretty good, too, like Jitterbug. If I ever catch on, boy, I got a huge catalog to get recorded.
I was going to back up just a little bit and go back even beyond Haggard and Jones. This is a question that it may take 10 sociology dissertations to answer, but it seems like really early country songs, and I'm talking about Leuven Brothers and Blue Sky Boys era, were unabashedly sentimental, where there's some pretty heart-jerking stuff there. What do you think has happened to us that we're not accepting of that sort of sentimentality anymore?
I don't know. Times change. It's like everything has gotten a little sugar-coated and vanilla-sized, and I don't want to be too personal, too graphic, too honest, maybe. But every now and then a new song, a country song, does come through that's still got that kind of impact. You know, one of my favorite songs by other artists is one that I recorded on this new album. They were all originals except for two. And one of them is one that's acknowledged to be the greatest country song of all time, biggest hit of all time, called "He Stopped Loving Her Today" by Bobby Braddock. But I read that even George Jones, when that song was first presented to him by his producer, he thought that was so melodramatic he didn't want to sing it. But it turned out to be his biggest hit, and that's the essence of the older country music to me.
Well, I heard you say that you hope to pitch to Nashville, and the title of your latest, "Please Cut My Song, Mr. Travis," also seems to imply you're going after that major market. Well, let's look at some cold, hard facts, which you as a music publisher probably already know. It's not uncommon for a major artist to be pitched in the ballpark of 1,200 songs for his or her album. So your song is competing against the songs and networking power of established hit writers and professional songwriters with major credits who are in the stable of a given record company. And the album's artist is probably going to want to write some songs and put on his own album. So it seems like there just aren't enough slots on an album to accommodate every songwriter who's vying for them, and you might as well buy a ticket to the lottery. So in a field that's that competitive, good just isn't good enough. So for what compelling reason should a producer choose a Jim Tur song over all the other songs that are out there in consideration?
Well, I'll go with the strength of my song if a producer or if an artist hears it. The challenge is to get it heard. And since I am in New Mexico and I'm not in Nashville schmoozing, which is sort of the bottom line to even being in the ballpark, my only chance as I see it is to get some attention around Nashville, get some reviews. And my newest album is actually this Songs for Sentimentalists, which is, again, a lot of songs I think could be cut by Nashville artists if they've heard. And I got a nice blurb on there from Bobby Braddock, and his name really commands some attention and respect. So hopefully that blurb, you know, if I get it around to some journalists, some publishers, and so on, people in Nashville might get curious, or producers might ask for it. And if they do, and if they listen, they'll hear some songs. And then if they appeal, they appeal. If they don't, they don't. But the challenge is to be heard. You know, nobody's ever accused me of being realistic. All I can do is write the songs. I'm not concerned with the odds, and neither can any songwriter be. I think you just write what you're inspired to write and what you think conveys something or excites you yourself, and hope somebody hears it and gets excited by it.
Well, how about a kind of old-fashioned song from the Please Cut My Song, Mr. Travis CD, that I think really fits this program? I'd like to play Dancing to the Radio.
Turn and spin so slowly, that radio dial. The music's drifting in here, across hundreds of miles. Just a little old portable with no CD, but it'll do to waltz you round the living room with me.
Just press the proper button for the radio band. Some things still work better when they're done by hand. You press my sweetest buttons too, I hardly need to say. We'll keep the beat forever when we dance this way.
Chesney, Paisley, Martina, or Faye will get us pirouetting down this little place. Until we're 80 or so, so let's keep dancing to the radio. Nobody to grade us, nothing to prove. We'll try a little two-step if the spirit moves.
Ain't nobody watching while we do our thing. A little country shuffle, some western swing.
It's cheap and it's healthy, but it still is fun. Two souls just about becoming one. AM or FM, it comes out right. Dancing to the radio day or night. Yeah, I'd like to dance nice and slow.
Cheek to cheek, toe to toe.
Dancing, dancing to the radio with you. Yeah, I'd like to dance nice and slow.
Cheek to cheek, toe to toe.
Dancing, dancing to the radio.
Mary did a beautiful job of singing with me on that. It wouldn't be much of a song without her.
And Mary Evans, I don't know who she is. Can you tell me?
Well, she's a beautiful lady. She used to work at the Orr House, I believe, as a waitress. She's an actress. And she was in a band, a real rocked-out singer with a lot of versatility. And I know so many good singers around here, and I'm hoping, you know, some of these people get some recognition, too. My thrust is really to do films that incorporate some of this music, and that I'm hoping that the music gets out and gets heard, and some of these artists get heard.
Well, that was a lovely duet. Well, you've been tremendously prolific in the last few years. I think it was maybe 5 CDs you've got out. What's on your plate now?
Well, I'm always writing. I don't know what the next vehicle will be, the next CD. I feel like I've got a couple right now that I need to focus on getting around Nashville and to some journalists and stuff there, especially since I have some good blurbs that I think will get their attention. But the truth is I've got several movie ideas, and even a documentary idea that relate to music that would incorporate a lot of music, a lot of original music. I have a title, a website, a concept, a sketched out script called American Skiffle. And skiffle, as you may know, is an English form of music. It's kind of somewhere between folk and rock. And the Beatles and some of the Stones and a lot of English artists started out in skiffle bands. I also have a documentary, for instance, called the Brill Building documentary. Brill Building was, of course, the in fact, I was in an interview one day on Diego's show, right in the studio with Carole King, who is the icon of the Brill Building era. She was a young songwriter, and all those fantastic songs of the 60s and the girl group songs and about 50 songs that we would recognize came out of the Brill Building. So I sketched out an idea called the Brill Building documentary, did a good trailer for it, if I do say so myself. And as a matter of fact, a guy from Bloomberg Organization wrote me the other day to say, what's the status of this thing? I saw it on YouTube, and it's got 5,000 views, and says it's coming out in 2012, and it hasn't, and what's the status? And I said, well, the status of everything is it requires production money. Are you interested in backing it? So we'll see where that goes. But I throw them out there. As I say, I'm not realistic. I just keep creating and hoping something hits one day, and I've got the catalog.
Well, they say that the clinical definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Do you think that's a good definition of songwriting as well?
Well, I mean, it could be a definition of me, but I just may have the last laugh if I have any luck, you know.
That Brill Building sounds like a great vehicle to do a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, we're about to run out of time, and I'd like to close with another piece of music. So let's get your website out there where folks can find your videos, your satire, and your CDs.
Well, my website is jimterr.com, T-E-R-R.
And I should give a warning to our listeners, prepare to be overwhelmed. The amount
I know
of material
I am.
Is, wow. Well, I'd like to close with my current favorite of your compositions, another swingy number, sung on your Please Cut My Song album by former local Don Armstrong. This is going to be Excuse Me While I Have the Blues. So is there anything you'd like to tell us about this cut before we play it?
You know Don and Victoria, they're really two of the most talented people in our whole universe of musicians. They're in Tucson now, and they've done a couple songs for me, and I'm really bless them and glad that they played along with me on a few things.
Jim, thank you very much for driving down to San Pedro.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for all the research and the good interview.
Or so-called common sense, when shortly after I arose, I noticed something was wrong. My baby was gone with her Jaguar, her keys, and her clothes. She had stolen away with nothing to say, as quiet and slick as you choose. Now I'm always polite, so I'm asking you nice, excuse me while I have the blues, just for a minute now. It's gonna be sad, it's gonna be bad, walking to work for a while. People pass by, at least in my mind's eye, with a good attitude and a smile. Yeah, unlike myself, they got someone else. They stroll down the sidewalk in twos. So, boss, I'll be straight. I'm gonna be late. Excuse me while I have the blues. Let me get this out of my system now. Yeah, I wish for just a day I could rent a happier jet whose happier mood I could use. But that's not the fee, it's just gonna be me. Excuse me while I have the blues. Yeah, sometimes you give your nearest relative to be in someone else's shoes for an hour or two. It don't matter who. Excuse me while I have the blues. Yeah, excuse me for just one more minute here.
Jim Tur will be performing at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe this Thursday, June 13th at 6 p.m., and he'll be giving a free songwriter's workshop at 4 p.m. Well, here's some dance announcements for the coming week. These are just the highlights.